Chapter 77. Stars in Your Eyes. When the retreat season ended, the Buddha and Ananda traveled throughout Magadha. They stopped in many out-of-the-way places and at every local Dharma center, so the Buddha could offer teaching to both the bhikkhus and the laity. The Buddha frequently pointed out beautiful scenery to Venerable Ananda. The Buddha knew that because Ananda devoted such wholehearted attention to attending to the Buddha's needs, he sometimes forgot to enjoy the countryside around them. Ananda had served as the Buddha's attendant for nearly 20 years. Thinking back over the years, he recalled how often the Buddha pointed to the landscape and exclaimed such things as, "Look how beautiful Vulture Peak is, Ananda," or, "Ananda, look how beautiful the plains of Saptapani are." Ananda fondly remembered the day the Buddha pointed to golden rice fields bordered by green grass and suggested they use the same pattern to sew the bhikkhus' robes. Ananda saw that the Buddha knew how to truly enjoy beautiful things while never becoming caught by either the beautiful or ugly. The following rainy season, the Buddha returned to Jetavana. Because King Pasenadi was on a journey, he did not see the Buddha until the retreat was half over. Immediately after his arrival, he visited the Buddha and told him that he no longer liked to be confined to the palace. Now that he was advanced in years, he had delegated many of his royal tasks to trusted ministers so that he could travel with a small party. He wanted to see and enjoy the land of his own country and that of neighboring kingdoms. When he visited another country, he never expected a formal reception. He came as a simple pilgrim. His trips were also occasions to practice walking meditation. Leaving behind all thoughts and worries, he took leisurely steps while enjoying the countryside. He told the Buddha how much these trips refreshed his heart. "Lord Buddha, I am 78 years old, the same as you. I know that you also enjoy walking in beautiful places. But I'm afraid my travels do not serve others in the way your travels do. Wherever you go, you stop to teach and guide the people. You are like a shining light wherever you go." The king confided to the Buddha a secret pain he carried in his heart. 7 years earlier, when an attempted coup took place in the capital, he wrongly accused the commander-in-chief of the royal forces, General Bandula, and had him executed. A few years later, he learned that the general had not been involved. The king was overcome with regret. He did all he could to restore the general's good name and provided ample assistance to his widow. He also appointed the general's nephew, General Kararayana, as the new commander-in-chief of the royal forces. During the remainder of the retreat season, the king visited Jetavana every other day to attend Dharma talks and discussions, and sometimes simply to sit quietly by the Buddha's side. When the retreat season came to a close, the Buddha began traveling. The king, too, set out on another trip with a small traveling party. The following year, the Buddha spent 2 weeks in Kuru after the retreat season. Then he followed the river down to Kosali, Varanasi, and Vesali before returning north. One day, while staying in Medalumpa, a small district in Sakya, the Buddha received an unexpected visit from King Pasenadi. It so happened that the king was traveling in the same region with Prince Vidudaba and General Karayana. The king learned from some local people that the Buddha was staying not far away in Medalumpa. As it was only a half-day's journey from where the king was, he instructed General Karayana to drive their carriage there. There were 3 other carriages in their party. They left their carriages outside the park where the Buddha was dwelling, and the king and the general entered the park together. The king asked a bhikkhu where to find the Buddha's hut, and the bhikkhu pointed to a small hut beneath a shady tree. The door to the hut was closed. The king walked leisurely to the hut, and before knocking, cleared his throat. He removed his sword and crown and handed them to the general, requesting the general to take them back to the carriage and wait for him there. The door to the Buddha's hut opened. He was most happy to see the king and invited him in at once. Both Sariputta and Ananda were also there. They stood to greet the king. The Buddha asked the king to be seated on the chair next to his own. Sariputta and Ananda stood behind the Buddha. To their surprise, the king stood up again, and then knelt down and kissed the Buddha's feet. Several times he said, "Lord, I am King Pasenadi of the kingdom of Kosala. I respectfully pay you homage." The Buddha assisted the king back onto his chair and asked, "Your Majesty, we are old close friends. Why do you pay me such formal respects today?" The king answered, "Lord, I am old. There are a number of things I wish to say to you before it is too late." The Buddha regarded him kindly and said, "Please speak." "Lord, I have total faith in you, the Enlightened One. I have total faith in the Dharma and in the Sangha. I have known many Brahmins and practitioners of other sects. I have watched so many of them practice in an upright manner for 10, 20, 30, or even 40 years, only to finally abandon their practice to return to a life of indulgence. But among your bhikkhus, I do not see anyone abandoning his practice. Lord, I have seen kings oppose other kings, generals plot against other generals, Brahmins compete with other Brahmins, wives berate husbands, children accuse their parents, brothers argue with brothers, and friends fight with friends. But I see the bhikkhus living in harmony, joy, and mutual respect. They live together like milk and water. Nowhere else have I witnessed such harmony. Lord, wherever I go, I see spiritual practitioners whose faces are lined with worry, anxiety, and hardship. But your bhikkhus look refreshed and happy, relaxed and carefree. Lord, all these things strengthen my faith in you and your teaching. Lord, I am a king from the warrior caste. It is within my power to order anyone's death or to condemn anyone to prison. Even so, during councils with my ministers, I am often interrupted. But in your Sangha, even when 1,000 bhikkhus are gathered, there is never so much as a murmur or the rustling of a single robe to disturb your speaking. That is marvelous, Lord. You do not need to wield a sword or threaten others with punishment to be paid absolute respect. Lord, this strengthens my faith in you and your teaching. Lord, I have watched famous scholars scheme together to come up with questions that will confound you. But when they meet with you and hear you expound the Dharma, their mouths fall open and they forget their useless questions. They express nothing but admiration for you. Lord, this also strengthens my faith in you and your teaching. Lord, there are 2 highly skilled horsemen named Isidatta and Purana who work in the palace. They receive their wages from me, but the respect they hold for me is nothing compared to the respect they hold for you. I once took them with me on one of my travels. We were caught in a storm one night and had to seek shelter in a tiny palm leaf hut. For most of the night, the horsemen spoke about your teaching. When they finally went to sleep, they slept with their heads in the direction of Vulture Peak and their feet pointing to me. You don't give them any wages, Lord, but they regard you far more highly than they do me. This also strengthens my faith in you and your teaching. Lord, you came from the same warrior caste as I. We are both 78 years old this year. I wanted to take this occasion to express my gratitude for the deep friendship we have shared. With your permission, I will now take my leave. Please, Your Majesty, said the Buddha, take good care of your health. He walked with the king to the door. When the Buddha turned back to Ananda and Sariputta, he saw them standing silently with their palms joined. He said, Sariputta and Ananda, King Pasenadi has just expressed his innermost sentiments about the 3 gems. Please share these things with others to help them strengthen their own faith. The next month, the Buddha returned south to Vulture Peak. Upon his arrival, he received 2 sad announcements. King Pasenadi had died under disturbing circumstances, and Venerable Moggallana had been murdered by hostile ascetics just outside Bamboo Forest. King Pasenadi did not die peacefully in his palace in Savatthi. He died in Rajagaha in circumstances hardly befitting a king. After visiting the Buddha that day in Medalumpa, the king walked back to his carriage. He was surprised to find only 1 carriage instead of the 4 he had left there. His attendant informed him that General Karayana had forced the others to return to Savatthi. The general still held the king's crown and sword. He told Prince Vidudaba to return at once to Savatthi and claim the throne as his own. The general said King Pasenadi was too old and weak to reign any longer. The prince was unwilling, but when General Karayana threatened to usurp the throne himself, the prince felt he had no choice but to obey the general's wishes. King Pasenadi headed straight to Rajagaha, intending to ask his nephew and son-in-law, King Ajatasattu, for assistance. The king was too upset to eat anything along the way, and only drank a small amount of water. When they reached Rajagaha, it was too late to disturb the palace. The king and his attendant checked into a local inn. That night the king fell suddenly ill and died in his attendant's arms before help could be sought. The attendant sobbed inconsolably over his king's sorry fate. When King Ajatasattu learned what had happened in the morning, he sent for King Pasenadi's body and ordered a solemn and majestic funeral be organized. When the funeral was over, he wanted to send soldiers to topple King Vidudaba, but he was discouraged by Bhikkhu Vimalakondana, formerly the physician Jivaka, who said that as King Pasenadi had already passed away and the new king was a rightful heir, there was no point in starting a war. Heeding this counsel, King Ajatasattu sent an envoy to Savati to express his recognition of the new king. Venerable Moggallana was one of the Buddha's finest senior disciples, ranking with Sariputta and Kondana. Many senior disciples had already passed away, including Kondana, who had been among the Buddha's first five disciples. The Kassapa brothers had all died, and so had Abbas Mahapajapati. Bhikkhu Rahula had died at the age of 51, shortly after his mother, Bhikkhuni Yasodhara, died. Venerable Moggallana was known for his fearless, upright character. He always spoke the truth directly and without compromise. Because of that, he had earned the hatred of others outside the Sangha. The day of his death, he set out, accompanied by two disciples, quite early in the morning. Assassins were hiding just outside the monastery, waiting for him. When he appeared, they rushed out and began to beat him and the other two bhikkhus with large sticks. The bhikkhus were outnumbered and unable to defend themselves from the blows. Moggallana's two disciples were beaten and left by the side of the road. They cried out for help, but it was too late. Venerable Moggallana let forth a cry that shook the forest. When other bhikkhus ran out of the monastery, Moggallana was dead, and the assassins had disappeared. Venerable Moggallana's body had already been cremated by the time the Buddha returned to Vulture Peak. An urn with his ashes had been placed just outside the Buddha's hut. The Buddha asked about Venerable Sariputta, and was told that since Moggallana's murder, he had remained in his hut with the door closed. Sariputta and Moggallana had been like brothers, as close as a form and its shadow. The Buddha had not yet stopped to rest after his travels, but he proceeded at once to Sariputta's hut to console him. As they walked to Sariputta's hut, Ananda reflected on how sad the Buddha must feel. How could he avoid feeling heartbroken when two of his closest friends had just died? The Buddha would console Sariputta, but who would console the Buddha? As if to answer Ananda's hidden thoughts, the Buddha stopped, looked at him, and said, "Ananda, everyone commends you for studying hard and possessing a phenomenal memory. But don't think that is enough. It is important to look after the Tathagata and the Sangha, but it is not sufficient. Whatever time remains to you, devote your efforts to breaking through birth and death. Learn to look at birth and death as mere illusions, like the stars one sees in one's eyes after rubbing them." Venerable Ananda bowed his head and continued walking in silence. The next day, the Buddha suggested a stupa be built for the Venerable Moggallana's relics. Chapter 78. 2,000 Saffron Robes. One afternoon, as the Buddha was doing walking meditation along the mountain slope, two bhikkhus arrived carrying Venerable Devadatta on a stretcher. Venerable Devadatta's health had been poor for several years, and now, on the point of death, he wished to see the Buddha. He had only six remaining disciples, having lost even his most fervent supporters years earlier. His closest associate, Venerable Kokalika, died years before of an unusual skin disease. During Devadatta's final years at Gayasisa, he had had much time alone to examine his actions. When the Buddha was informed that Venerable Devadatta wished to see him, he returned to his hut at once in order to receive him. Venerable Devadatta was too weak to sit up. He had barely enough strength to speak. He looked at the Buddha and with great pain joined his palms and spoke the words, "I take refuge in the Buddha." The Buddha gently placed his hand on Devadatta's forehead. That evening, Venerable Devadatta died. It was summer, and the skies were clear and blue. The Buddha was preparing to depart on a journey when a messenger from King Ajatasattu arrived. It was Vasakara, Minister of Foreign Affairs. He had been asked by the king to inform the Buddha about the king's intentions to send his army to conquer Vajji, a country that lay north of the Ganga. Before carrying out his attack, the king wanted to ask what the Buddha thought of his plans. Venerable Ananda was also present, standing behind the Buddha and fanning him. The Buddha turned to Ananda and asked, "Venerable Ananda, have you heard whether or not the people of Vajji still regularly gather together in large numbers to discuss politics?" Ananda answered, "Lord, I have heard that the people of Vajji often assemble in large numbers to discuss the political situation." "Then Vajji still prospers, Ananda. And tell me, do you know whether or not they still display a spirit of cooperation and unity during their meetings?" "Lord, I have heard they enjoy great cooperation and unity." "Well, then Vajji still prospers. Ananda, do the people of Vajji still respect and follow the laws that have been enacted in their country?" "Lord, I have heard that they respect and follow all their laws." "Then it is certain Vajji still prospers." "Ananda, do the people of Vajji respect and listen to worthy leaders?" "Lord, I have heard that the people of Vajji respect and listen to worthy leaders." "Then it is certain their country still prospers." "Ananda, have you heard whether or not there is rape and other violent crime in Vajji?" "Lord, there is almost no rape or other violent crime in their country." "Then Vajji continues to prosper." "Ananda, have you heard whether or not the people of Vajji still protect and maintain the shrines of their ancestors?" "Lord, it is said that they protect and maintain the shrines of their ancestors." "Then Vajji still prospers." "Have you heard whether or not the people of Vajji respect, make offerings to, and study with spiritual teachers who have attained the way?" "Lord, they continue to respect, make offerings to, and study with spiritual teachers who have attained the way." "Ananda, it is then certain that Vajji still prospers." "Ananda, some time ago the Tathagata had the opportunity to speak with Vajji's leaders about the seven practices that make a country prosper. They are called the seven practices of no regression. They include gathering together for discussion, cooperation and unity, respecting laws that have been enacted, respecting and following worthy leaders, refraining from rape and other violent crimes, protecting the ancestral shrines, and respecting teachers who have attained the way. As the people of Vajji continue to observe these seven practices, it is certain that their country still prospers. Because of that, the Tathagata believes it would be impossible for Magadha to defeat Vajji." Minister Vasakara spoke, "Lord, if the people of Vajji observed only one of those seven practices, their country would prosper." "Lord, I do not think King Ajatasattu can win a war with Vajji with power and weapons alone. He could only succeed if he sowed seeds of discord among Vajji's leaders. Thank you, Lord, for your counsel. I will now return to my duties." After Vasakara departed, the Buddha turned to Ananda and said, "Vasakara knows how to scheme. The Tathagata fears that in the future, King Ajatasattu will indeed send his army to fight Vajji." That afternoon, the Buddha asked Venerable Ananda to invite all the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis currently in Rajagaha to assemble at Vulture Peak. When after 7 days they were all gathered, they numbered 2,000. It was a splendid sight to see so many saffron robes against the mountain. The Buddha walked slowly from his hut down to the Dharma platform where the monks and nuns were gathered. He stepped up onto the platform, looked out over the community, smiled and said, "Bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, the Tathagata will teach you the seven methods to prevent the teaching and Sangha from falling into decline. Listen. First, meet frequently in groups to study and discuss the Dharma. Second, always gather and disperse in a spirit of cooperation and unity. Third, respect and follow the precepts that have been enacted. Fourth, respect and follow the guidance of elders in the Sangha who possess virtue and experience. Fifth, live a pure and simple life, unswayed by desire and greed. Sixth, cherish a calm and peaceful life. Seventh, dwell in mindfulness in order to realize peace, joy, and liberation, and to become a refuge and support to friends along the path. Bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, if you live by these seven practices, the Dharma will flourish, and the Sangha cannot fall into decline. Nothing outside will be able to disturb the Sangha. Only division and discord from within can cause the Sangha to break. Bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, when a lion king dies in the mountain forest, no animals dare eat its flesh. Only the worms in its own body devour it from within. Protect the Dharma by living according to these seven practices. Never become as worms which devour a lion's corpse from within. The Buddha also counseled the monks and nuns to avoid wasting precious time by engaging in idle conversation, oversleeping, pursuing fame and recognition, chasing after desires, spending time with people of poor character, and being satisfied with only a shallow understanding of the teaching. He reminded them of the seven factors of awakening as the path every bhikkhu and bhikkhuni should travel. Mindfulness, investigating dharmas, energy, joy, ease, concentration, and letting go. He also repeated the teachings on impermanence, emptiness of self, non-attachment, liberation, and overcoming desire and greed. The 2,000 monks and nuns remained on Vulture Peak for 10 days. They slept beneath trees, in caves and huts, or by mountain streams. The Buddha gave them a Dharma talk every day. On the 10th and final day, the Buddha told them they could return to their own centers. After the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis departed, the Buddha turned to Venerable Ananda and said, "We will visit Bamboo Forest tomorrow." After visiting Bamboo Forest, the Buddha and Ananda left Rajagaha and headed toward Ambalatika, the refreshing park set aside long ago by King Bimbisara for followers of the way. The bhikkhus often rested there on their way to Nalanda. Venerable Sariputta had once dwelled there with Rahula. The Buddha visited and instructed the bhikkhus living in Ambalatika. He spoke about precepts, concentration, and understanding. The Buddha proceeded to Nalanda, accompanied by 100 bhikkhus. Venerables Ananda, Sariputta, and Anuruddha walked close by his side. When they reached Nalanda, the Buddha rested in the Pavarika's mango grove. The next morning, Venerable Sariputta sat for a long, quiet moment by the Buddha's side. Finally, he said, "Lord, I am sure that in the past, present, or future, there is no spiritual teacher whose wisdom and attainment surpasses yours." The Buddha said, "Sariputta, those words are as bold as a lion's roar. Have you met all the spiritual teachers in the past, present, and future that you dare make such a statement?" "Lord, I have not met all the masters of the three realms, but there is one thing I know for certain. I have lived close by you for more than 45 years. I have heard your teaching, and I have observed the way you live. I know that you dwell constantly in awareness. You are a perfect master of your 6 senses. You never show any sign of the 5 obstacles of greed and desire, anger and hatred, forgetfulness, agitation, doubt, or suspicion. While there may be masters in the past, present, and future who attain to the same wisdom and awakening, I do not think anyone could surpass your understanding." In Nalanda, the Buddha taught the bhikkhus more concerning precepts, concentration, and understanding. He then returned to Pataligama, where he was welcomed by crowds of bhikkhus and lay disciples. He was offered food and water, after which he delivered a Dharma talk. The next morning, Venerable Sariputta received news that his mother was very ill. She was more than 100 years old. He requested permission to go visit her. The Buddha saw Venerable Sariputta off. Sariputta bowed to him 3 times and then departed for Nala with the novice Kunda. As the Buddha and bhikkhus passed through the city gates of Pataligama, they were met by 2 officials from Magadha, Sunida and Vasakara. They had been assigned by King Ajatasattu to transform Pataligama into a major city. They told the Buddha, "We plan to rename the city gate you have just passed through Gautama Gate. Allow us to accompany you to the ferry landing. We will name it Gautama Ferry Landing." The Ganga was so swollen from recent rains that the crows could stand on the high upper banks and dip their beaks in the water for a drink. 5 rafts carried the Buddha and his bhikkhus across the river. Venerable Ananda stood by the Buddha's side. They looked out over the water toward Vesali on the opposite shore. Ananda remembered the time 25 years earlier when the Buddha had been greeted by vast throngs of people on that shore. At that time, Vesali was almost destroyed by a plague. Young and old alike died in droves. There was nothing even the best physicians in Vesali could do. Altars were set up, but even ceaseless prayers did nothing to alter the situation. Finally, the people's thoughts turned toward the Buddha. Governor Tomara traveled to Rajagaha and beseeched the Buddha to come to Vesali in hopes that his virtuous presence would turn the tragic tide. The Buddha agreed to go. King Bimbisara and his queen, palace officials, and the citizens of Rajagaha saw the Buddha off. When the Buddha reached Vesali by boat, he found the shore crowded with aharas, flags, and flowers to welcome him as though he were a savior. The people's cheers shook the air. Venerable Vimala Kondana, the former Jivaka, and several senior disciples accompanied the Buddha. The Buddha's foot touched the shore, then thunder shook the sky, and it began to rain. It was the first rain after a long drought, and it brought cool relief and new hope. The Buddha and his bhikkhus were led to a park in the center of Kottigama. There the Buddha spoke about the three treasures. A few days later, the Buddha and his bhikkhus were invited to Vesali. They dwelled at Kuttagara Monastery in Mahavana during their stay. Thanks to the Buddha's merit and Vimalakondana's skills, the spread of the plague was slowed until at last it disappeared. The Buddha remained in Vesali for 6 months. Ananda's thoughts returned to the present as they reached the shore. The Buddha walked to Kottigama, where he was met by a large number of monks. He spoke about the four establishments of mindfulness and about precepts, concentration, and understanding. After spending several days in Kottigama, the Buddha headed for Nadika. There, he and his bhikkhus slept in a brick house called Ginjakavasata. In Nadika, the Buddha thought about the many disciples who had passed away in that same region. He thought of his sister, Bhikkhuni Sundarananda, Bhikkhus Sala and Nadia, lay disciple Sujata, who had so long ago offered him milk, and lay disciples Kakuda, Bada, and Subada. At least 50 bhikkhus in the region had attained the fruits of stream enterer, once returner and never returner. Bhikkhunanda had attained the fruit of returning once more. Bhikkhus Salha and Nadia had attained arhatship. The Buddha taught his disciples that whoever has faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha need only look into his or her own heart to know whether he or she had entered the stream of liberation. There was no need to ask anyone else. In Nadika, the Buddha taught the bhikkhus concerning the precepts, concentration, and understanding. He walked to Vesali, where he rested on Ambapali's mango grove. There he spoke on contemplating the body, feelings, mind, and objects of mind. When Ambapali heard that the Buddha was dwelling in the mango grove, she came at once to visit him. She invited him and the bhikkhus for a meal offering. After the meal, she asked to be ordained as a bhikkhuni, and she was accepted into the Sangha of nuns. The Buddha spoke more about precepts, concentration, and understanding during his stay at Vesali. Afterward, he visited Beluvagamaka village. As the rainy season was already underway, he decided to spend it there. It was the 45th retreat season since the Buddha attained awakening. He asked monks and nuns in the region to stay at Dharma centers in Vesali or in the homes of friends and relatives for the duration of the retreat. Halfway into the retreat season, the Buddha fell gravely ill. Though he was in extreme pain, he did not utter any sound. Lying down, he continued to mindfully follow his breath. At first, his disciples feared he would not survive his illness. But to their joy, he slowly regained his strength. After many days, he was able to sit on a chair outside his hut. Chapter 79. Sandalwood Tree Mushrooms. Venerable Ananda sat down next to the Buddha and spoke in a soft voice. "I never saw you so sick in all the years we've been together. I felt paralyzed. I couldn't think clearly or carry out my duties. The others did not think you would pull through. But I said to myself, the Lord Buddha has not yet given us his last testament. Surely he cannot enter nirvana yet. That thought kept me from the brink of despair." The Buddha said, "Ananda, what else can you and the Sangha expect from me? I have taught the Dharma fully and deeply. Do you think I have concealed anything from the bhikkhus? Ananda, the teaching is the true refuge. Every person must make the teaching his own refuge. live according to the teaching. Every person should be a lamp unto himself. Ananda, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are present in everyone. The capacity for enlightenment is the Buddha. The teaching is the Dharma. The community of support is the Sangha. No one can take away the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha within you. Though heaven and earth may crumble, the three gems will remain intact within every person. They are the true refuge. When a bhikkhu dwells in mindfulness and contemplates his body, feelings, mind, and objects of mind, he is like an island unto himself. He possesses the truest refuge of all. No person, not even a great master, can ever be a more stable refuge than your own island of mindfulness, the three gems within you. By the end of the retreat, the Buddha's health was greatly restored. One morning, novice Kunda, who was Venerable Sariputta's attendant, came seeking Ananda. He informed Ananda that Sariputta had just died in Nala. He handed Ananda Venerable Sariputta's robe, begging bowl, and urn of ashes. He then covered his face and burst into tears. Venerable Ananda wept too. Kunda explained that after Sariputta returned to Nala, he cared for his mother until her death. After her cremation ceremony, he assembled his relatives and all the villagers and gave them a teaching concerning the Dharma. He gave them the three refuges and showed them how to follow the practice. He then sat in a lotus position and passed into nirvana. Shortly before this, he told Kunda that he wanted his robe, bowl, and ashes carried back to the Buddha. He also wanted Kunda to ask the Buddha to allow Kunda to remain by the Buddha's side. Venerable Sariputta told Kunda that he wished to pass away before the Buddha did. Venerable Ananda wiped away his tears and went with Kunda to find the Buddha. The Buddha gazed quietly at the robe, bowl, and ashes of his greatest disciple. He did not say anything. Then he looked up and gently patted Kunda's head. Venerable Ananda said, "Lord Buddha, when I heard that our brother Sariputta was dead, I felt paralyzed. My eyes and mind grew hazy. I am deeply grieved." The Buddha looked at Ananda and said, "Ananda, did your brother take away your precepts, concentration, understanding, and liberation when he died?" Ananda quietly answered, "That is not the reason for my sadness, Lord. When brother Sariputta was alive, he lived the teaching with his whole being. He taught, guided, and encouraged the rest of us. With brothers Sariputta and Moggallana gone, the Sangha feels empty. How could we not feel sad?" The Buddha said, "Ananda, so many times I've reminded you that with birth there is death. That which comes together must separate. All dharmas are impermanent. We should not become attached to them. You must transcend the world of birth and death, arising and dissolving. Ananda, Sariputta was a great branch that fulfilled his duty in helping nourish the tree. That branch is still present in the tree. The tree is the community of bhikkhus practicing the teaching of enlightenment. If you but open your eyes and look, you will see Sariputta in yourself, in the Tathagata, in the community of bhikkhus, in all the people Sariputta taught, and novice Kunda, and along every path Sariputta traveled to spread the teaching. Open your eyes, Ananda, and you will see Sariputta everywhere. Don't think Sariputta is no longer with us. He is here, and will always be." Ananda, Sariputta was a bodhisattva, an enlightened person who used his understanding and love to guide other beings to the shore of enlightenment. Among the bhikkhus, Sariputta earned praise for his great wisdom. He will be remembered by future generations as a bodhisattva of great understanding. Ananda, among the bhikkhus, there are many bodhisattvas who, like Sariputta, have taken the great vow. Bhikkhu Puna, Bhikkhuni Yasodhara, lay disciple Sudatta are bodhisattvas of great compassion who lived the vow to help all beings, never afraid of suffering or hardship. Bhikkhuni Yasodhara and disciple Sudatta have passed away, but Venerable Puna continues to work courageously and energetically to serve all beings. The Tathagata thinks of Venerable Moggallana and knows he was a bodhisattva of great courage and energy. Few can compare with him. Venerable Mahakasapa, with his simple, humble life, is a bodhisattva of simple living. Venerable Anuruddha is a bodhisattva of great effort and diligence. Ananda, if future generations continue to study and practice the path of liberation, bodhisattvas will continue to appear in this world. Ananda, faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, is faith in the future of the community. In the future, there will be other bodhisattvas, as great as Sariputta, Moggallana, Puna, Anuruddha, Yasodhara, and Anantapindika. Ananda, do not grieve over brother Sariputta's death. That noon, along the banks of the Ganga, near Ukasela hamlet, the Buddha serenely announced Venerable Sariputta's death. He urged the bhikkhus to devote all their efforts to become more like Sariputta, who took the great vow to help all other beings. He said, "Bhikkhus, you should take refuge in yourself and be an island unto yourself. Do not rely on anything else, and you will not be drowned by the waves of sorrow and despair. You should take refuge in the Dharma, and take the Dharma as the island." One morning, the Buddha and Ananda entered Vaisali to beg. They took their food and ate it in a nearby forest. After that, the Buddha said, "Ananda, we should return to Kapala Temple to rest this afternoon." Along the way to Kapala Temple, the Buddha stopped several times to admire the landscape. He said, "Ananda, Vaisali is so beautiful. Uddena Temple is so lovely. All the temples such as Gotamaka, Satambaka, and Bahuputa are beautiful. The temple in Kapala, where we will rest soon, is also a very pleasant place." After making a place for the Buddha to rest, Venerable Ananda went outside to practice walking meditation. While he was walking, the earth suddenly quaked beneath his feet. Both his mind and body were shaken. He quickly returned to the temple and found the Buddha sitting there peacefully. Ananda told him of the tremor he had just felt. The Buddha said, "Ananda, the Tathagata has made his decision. In 3 months, I will pass away." Venerable Ananda felt his arms and legs go numb, his eyes blurred, and his head spin. He knelt before the Buddha and begged him, "Please, Lord, do not die so soon. Please have pity on your disciples." The Buddha did not answer. Ananda repeated his words 3 times. The Buddha then said, "Ananda, if you have faith in the Tathagata, you will know that my decisions are timely. I have said I will pass away in 3 months. Ananda, invite all the bhikkhus in this region to gather at Kuttagara Dharma Hall in the great forest." 7 days later, 1,500 bhikkhus and bhikkhunis gathered in Kuttagara Dharma Hall. The Buddha sat on the Dharma platform. He looked out over the community and said, "Bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, all that the Tathagata has transmitted to you, you must carefully and skillfully study, observe, practice, and verify for yourselves in order to transmit it to future generations. Living and practicing the way should continue to assure the peace, joy, and happiness of all beings. Bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, the essence of the Tathagata's teaching can be found in the 4 establishments of mindfulness, the 4 right efforts, the 4 bases of spiritual strength, the 5 faculties, the 5 powers, the 7 factors of awakening, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Study, practice, realize, and transmit these teachings. Bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, all dharmas are impermanent. They are born and die. They arise and dissolve. Make great efforts to attain liberation. In 3 months, the Tathagata will pass away." 1,500 monks and nuns silently listened to the Buddha and absorbed his direct teaching. They understood this would be their last chance to see and hear the Buddha give a Dharma talk. Knowing that the Buddha would pass away soon, everyone felt anguish. The next morning, the Buddha went into Vaisali to beg, and then he ate in the forest. Afterward, he and several bhikkhus departed from Vaisali. Looking back at the city with the eyes of an elephant queen, the Buddha said to Venerable Ananda, "Ananda, Vaisali is so beautiful. This is the last time the Tathagata will look upon it." The Buddha then turned around. Looking straight ahead, he said, "Let us head toward Bandagama." That afternoon, the Buddha offered Dharma teaching to 300 bhikkhus and Bandhagama about precepts, concentration, understanding, and liberation. After several days of rest there, the Buddha proceeded on to Hatigama, Ambagama, and Jambugama. He instructed the bhikkhus in all these places. They next traveled to Boganagara, where the Buddha rested in Ananda Temple. Many bhikkhus in the region came to receive his teaching. He told the bhikkhus how necessary it was to verify the teaching for themselves. Whenever someone speaks about the teaching, even if he claims that it comes directly from recognized authorities, do not be hasty to accept his words as the Tathagata's authentic teaching. Compare what he says to the sutras and precepts. If it contradicts the sutras and precepts, discard what he says. But if his words are in accord with the sutras and precepts, accept and practice what he says. The Buddha went on to Pava, where he rested in the mango grove that belonged to a lay disciple named Kunda, a blacksmith's son. Kunda invited the Buddha and the nearly 300 bhikkhus traveling with him to take a meal in his home. Kunda's wife and friends served all the bhikkhus, while Kunda personally served the Buddha a special dish he had prepared. It was a dish of mushrooms picked from a sandalwood tree, and was called Sukara Madhava. When he had finished eating, the Buddha told Kunda, "Dear Kunda, please bury whatever remains of the mushrooms and do not allow anyone else to eat them." When everyone was finished eating, the Buddha gave a Dharma talk. Then he and the bhikkhus rested in the mango grove. That night, the Buddha was seized with violent stomach cramps. He was unable to sleep all night. In the morning, he took to the road with the bhikkhus and headed toward Kusinara. All along the way, his stomach cramps worsened until he was forced to stop and rest beneath a tree. Venerable Ananda folded the Buddha's extra sanghati and placed it beneath the tree for the Buddha to rest upon. The Buddha asked Ananda to fetch some water for him to ease his thirst. Ananda said, "Lord, the stream here is filled with muddy water because a caravan of cattle carts recently passed by. Please wait until we reach the Kakuta River. The water there will be clear and sweet. I will fetch you water there for both washing and drinking." But the Buddha said, "Ananda, I am too thirsty. Please get me some water here." Ananda did as he was told. To his surprise, when he scooped up the muddy water into a jug, it turned perfectly clear. After he drank the water, the Buddha lay down to rest. Venerables Anuruddha and Ananda sat close by. The other bhikkhus sat in a circle around the Buddha. At that very moment, a man from Kusinara happened to walk by. When he saw the Buddha and the bhikkhus, he bowed down low. He introduced himself as Pukusa, a member of the Mala clan. He had once been a disciple of Master Alarakalama, the same teacher the young Siddhartha had studied with. Pukusa had heard a great deal about the Buddha. He bowed again and then offered the Buddha two new robes. The Buddha accepted one and then asked Pukusa to offer the other robe to Venerable Ananda. Pukusa asked to be accepted as a disciple. The Buddha spoke to him of the teaching and gave him the refuges. Overjoyed, Pukusa thanked the Buddha and then took his leave. The Buddha's robe was travel-worn and stained, and so Ananda helped him change into the new robe. Then the Buddha stood up and, together with the bhikkhus, continued to walk toward Kusinara. When they reached the banks of the Kakuta River, the Buddha bathed and drank more water. Then he headed for a nearby mango grove. He asked Bhikkhu Kundaka to fold his extra robe and place it on the ground for him to lie upon. The Buddha called Venerable Ananda and said, "Ananda, the meal we ate at lay disciple Kunda's home was the Tathagata's last meal. People may accuse Kunda of serving me an unworthy meal, so I want you to tell him that the two meals I treasure the most in my life were the one I ate just before attaining the way and my last meal before passing into nirvana. He should feel nothing but happiness for having served me one of those meals." After resting a short while, the Buddha stood up and said, "Ananda, let us cross the Hiranavati River and enter the forest of sal trees, which belongs to the Mala people. That forest, at the entrance to Kusinara, is most beautiful." Chapter 80. Be Diligent. It was dusk by the time the Buddha and the bhikkhus reached the forest of sal trees. The Buddha asked Ananda to prepare a place between two sal trees for him to lie down. The Buddha lay on his side, his head facing north. All the bhikkhus sat around him. They knew that the Buddha would pass into nirvana that same night. The Buddha looked up at the trees and said, "Ananda, look! It is not yet spring, but the sal trees are covered with red blossoms. Do you see the petals falling on the Tathagata's robes and the robes of all the bhikkhus? This forest is truly beautiful. Do you see the western horizon all aglow from the setting sun? Do you hear the gentle breeze rustling in the sal branches? The Tathagata finds all these things lovely and touching. Bhikkhus, if you want to please me, if you want to express your respect and gratitude to the Tathagata, there is only one way, and that is by living the teaching." The evening was warm, and Venerable Upavana stood over the Buddha to fan him, but the Buddha asked him not to. Perhaps the Buddha did not want his splendid view of the setting sun obstructed. The Buddha asked Venerable Anuruddha, "I do not see Ananda. Where is he?" Another bhikkhu spoke up, "I saw Brother Ananda standing behind some trees weeping. He was saying to himself, 'I have not yet attained my spiritual goal, and now my teacher is dying. Who has ever cared more deeply for me than my teacher?'" The Buddha asked the bhikkhu to summon Ananda. The Buddha tried to comfort Ananda. He said, "Don't be so sad, Ananda. The Tathagata has often reminded you that all dharmas are impermanent. With birth, there is death. With arising, there is dissolving. With coming together, there is separation. How can there be birth without death? How can there be arising without dissolving? How can there be coming together without separation? Ananda, you have cared for me with all your heart for many years. You have devoted all your efforts to help me, and I am most grateful to you. Your merit is great, Ananda, but you can go even farther. If you make just a little more effort, you can overcome birth and death. You can attain freedom and transcend every sorrow. I know you can do that, and that is what would make me the most happy." Turning to the other bhikkhus, the Buddha said, "No one has been as good an attendant as Ananda. Other attendants in the past sometimes dropped my robe or bowl to the ground, but never Ananda. He has taken care of all my needs from the tiniest detail to the largest tasks. Ananda always knew when and where a bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, lay disciple, king, official, or practitioner from a different religious sect should meet with me. He arranged all meetings most effectively and intelligently. The Tathagata believes that no enlightened master in the past or future could have an attendant more talented and devoted than Ananda." Venerable Ananda wiped his tears and said, "Lord, please don't pass away here. Kusinara is just a small town of mud dwellings. There are so many more worthy places, like Sampa, Rajagaha, Savati, Saketa, Kosambi, or Varanasi. Please, Lord, select such a place to pass away so that more people will have a chance to see your face one last time." The Buddha replied, "Ananda, Kusinara is also important, even if it is no more than a small town of mud dwellings. But Tathagata finds this forest most agreeable. Ananda, do you see the sal flowers falling about me?" The Buddha asked Ananda to go into Kusinara and announce to the malas that the Buddha would pass into nirvana in the grove of sal trees at the night's last watch. When the mala people heard this news, they hastily made their way to the forest. An ascetic named Subhadda was among them. While the people took turns bowing to the Buddha, Subhadda asked Venerable Ananda if he could have an audience with the Buddha. Ananda refused, saying the Buddha was too tired to receive anyone. But the Buddha overheard their conversation and said, "Ananda, let ascetic Subhadda speak with me. The Tathagata will receive him." Ascetic Subhadda knelt before the Buddha. He had long felt drawn to the Buddha's teaching, but had never met him before. He bowed and said, "Lord, I have heard about spiritual leaders such as Purana Kassapa, Makali Gosala, Ajita Kesakambali, Pakuda Kakayana, Sanjaya Belatiputta, and Nigantha Nataputta. I would like to ask if, according to you, any of them attained true enlightenment." The Buddha answered, "Subhadda, Whether or not they attained enlightenment is not a necessary thing to discuss now. Subhadda, the Tathagata will show you the path by which you yourself can attain enlightenment. The Buddha spoke to Subhadda about the Noble Eightfold Path. He concluded by saying, Subhadda, wherever the Noble Eightfold Path is truly practiced, you will find people who have attained enlightenment. Subhadda, if you follow this path, you too can attain enlightenment. Ascetic Subhadda felt his heart suddenly opened. He was filled with great happiness. He asked the Buddha to accept him as a bhikkhu. The Buddha asked the venerable Anuruddha to perform the ordination ceremony right then and there. Subhadda was the last disciple received by the Buddha. After Subhadda's head was shaved, he received the precepts and was given a robe and bowl. The Buddha then looked at all the bhikkhus sitting around him. Many bhikkhus from the vicinity had arrived, and so there were now nearly 500. The Buddha spoke to them. Bhikkhus, if you have any doubts or perplexity concerning the teaching, now is the time to ask the Tathagata about it. Don't let this opportunity pass by, so that later you will reproach yourselves, saying, that day I was face to face with the Buddha, but I did not ask him. The Buddha repeated these words 3 times, but no bhikkhu spoke. Venerable Ananda exclaimed, Lord, it is truly wonderful. I have faith in the community of bhikkhus. I have faith in the Sangha. Everyone has clearly understood your teaching. No one has any doubts or perplexity about your teaching and the path to realize it. The Buddha said, Ananda, you speak from faith, or the Tathagata has direct knowledge. The Tathagata knows that all the bhikkhus here possess deep faith in the 3 gems. Even the lowest attainment among these bhikkhus is that of stream enterer. The Buddha looked quietly over the community and then said, Bhikkhus, listen to what the Tathagata now says. Dharmas are impermanent. If there is birth, there is death. Be diligent in your efforts to attain liberation. The Buddha closed his eyes. He had spoken his last words. The earth shook. Sal blossoms fell like rain. Everyone felt their minds and bodies tremble. They knew the Buddha had passed into nirvana. Listener, please pause here and breathe lightly for a few minutes before continuing. The Buddha had passed away. Some bhikkhus threw up their arms and flung themselves on the ground. They wailed, The Buddha has passed away! The Lord has died! The eyes of the world are no more! Who can we take refuge in now? While these bhikkhus cried and thrashed about, other bhikkhus sat silently, observing their breath and contemplating the things the Buddha had taught them. Venerable Anuruddha spoke up, Brothers, do not cry so pitifully. The Lord Buddha taught us that with birth there is death, with arising there is dissolving, with coming together there is separation. If you understand and follow the Buddha's teaching, you will cease to make such a disturbance. Please sit up again and follow your breathing. We will maintain silence. Everyone returned to his place and followed Venerable Anuruddha's counsel. He led them in reciting sutras they all knew by heart, which spoke about impermanence, emptiness of self, non-attachment, and liberation. Calm dignity was restored. The malas lit torches. Sounds of chanting echoed impressively in the dark night as everyone placed his full awareness on the words in the sutras. After a lengthy recitation, Venerable Anuruddha gave a Dharma talk. He praised the Buddha's attainments, his wisdom, compassion, virtue, concentration, joy, and equanimity. When Venerable Anuruddha finished speaking, Venerable Ananda recounted beautiful episodes from the Buddha's life. Throughout the night, the 2 venerables took turns speaking. The 500 bhikkhus and 300 lay disciples listened quietly. As torches burned down, new ones were lit to take their places until dawn broke. Chapter 81. Old Path, White Clouds. When day broke, Venerable Anuruddha said to Venerable Ananda, Brother, Go into Kusinara and inform the authorities that our master has passed away so that they may begin the necessary arrangements. Venerable Ananda put on his outer robe and entered town. The Mala officials were holding a meeting to discuss local matters. When they learned the Buddha had passed away, they expressed deep sorrow and regret. They put aside all other work in order to make arrangements for the Buddha's funeral. By the time the sun was perched above the trees, everyone in Kusinara knew of the Buddha's death in the forest of sal trees. Many beat their chests and sobbed. They regretted they had not been able to look upon and bow to the Buddha before his death. People came to the forest bearing flowers, incense, musical instruments, and cloth streamers. They prostrated and placed flowers and incense around his body. They performed special songs and dances and draped colorful streamers throughout the forest. People brought food offerings to the 500 bhikkhus. Before long, the sal forest had the atmosphere of a festival. Occasionally, Venerable Anuruddha invited the sound of the large bell to call people back to silence. He then led everyone in reciting passages from the sutras. For 6 days and nights, the people of Kusinara and nearby Pava came to offer flowers, incense, dance, and music. Mandarava blossoms and other flowers soon thickly carpeted the area between the two sal trees. On the 7th day, the Mala authorities bathed themselves in water perfumed with incense, put on ceremonial garments, and carried the Buddha's body into town. They passed through the town center and out the east gate to Makutabandana Temple, the main temple of the Malas. The town officials had planned a funeral fit for a king. The Buddha's body was wrapped in many layers of cloth and then placed in an iron coffin, which was placed in another, larger iron coffin. It was then placed on a great funeral pyre of fragrant wood. The moment to light the pyre had come. Just as the authorities approached with their torches, a messenger on horseback rode up and asked them to wait. He informed them that Venerable Mahakasapa and 500 bhikkhus were on their way to the funeral from Pava. Venerable Mahakasapa had been teaching the Dharma in Kampa. He learned of the Buddha's imminent death in Vesali and that the Buddha was traveling north. The Venerable immediately set out to find the Buddha. Everywhere he went, other bhikkhus asked to join him. By the time he reached Bandagama, there were 500 bhikkhus with him. When they met a traveler coming from the opposite direction with a sal flower tucked in his shirt. The man informed them that the Buddha had already passed away in the sal forest near Kusinara 6 days earlier. With that news, Mahakasapa's search came to an end, and he led his bhikkhus toward Kusinara. They met a man on horseback who agreed to gallop ahead to inform Venerable Anuruddha that they were on their way to attend the funeral. At noon, Venerable Mahakasapa and the 500 bhikkhus reached Makutabandana Temple. The Venerable placed the end of his robe over his right shoulder, joined his palms, and solemnly walked around the altar 3 times. He faced the Buddha and prostrated along with the 500 bhikkhus. After they completed their 3rd bow, the pyre was lit. Everyone, bhikkhus and laity alike, knelt down and joined their palms. Venerable Anuruddha invited the bell to sound and led everyone in reciting passages on impermanence, emptiness of self, non-attachment, and liberation. It was a most majestic sound. When the fire died down, perfume was poured over the ashes. The coffin was lowered and opened up, and the authorities placed the Buddha's relics into a golden jar, which was placed on the temple's main altar. Senior disciples took turns guarding the relics. News of the Buddha's death had been sent several days earlier to other cities, and delegations from neighboring kingdoms arrived to pay their respects. They were given a share of the Buddha's relics to be kept in stupas. There were representatives from Mogata, Vesali, Sakya, Koliya, Bulaya, Pava, and Veta. They divided the relics into 8 portions. The people of Mogada would build a stupa in Rajagaha. The people of Likavi would build one in Vesali. The people of Sakya would build one in Kapilavatu. The Buli people in Alakapa. The Koliya people in Ramagama. The Veta people in Vetadipa. And the Malas in both Kusinara and Pava. After the delegations returned to their own countries, All the bhikkhus returned to their own locales to practice and teach. Venerables Mahakasapa, Anuruddha, and Ananda brought the Buddha's begging bowl back to Bamboo Forest. A month later, Venerable Mahakasapa organized an assembly of bhikkhus and rajagaha with the purpose of compiling all the sutras and precepts that the Buddha had given them. 500 bhikkhus were to be selected based on their standing and experience in the Sangha. The assembly was to begin at the beginning of the retreat season and last for 6 months. Venerable Mahakasapa had been considered the fourth highest-ranking disciple of the Buddha after Venerables Kondana, Sariputta, and Moggallana. He was especially regarded for his simple living and humility. He had been deeply trusted and loved by the Buddha. Everyone in the Sangha had heard about the time 20 years earlier when Mahakasapa sewed his own sangati from several hundred scraps of discarded cloth. Once he folded this sangati and invited the Buddha to sit upon it. The Buddha remarked how soft a cushion it made, and Venerable Mahakasapa offered the robe to the Buddha. The Buddha accepted it with a smile and offered his own sangati to Mahakasapa in return. Everyone also knew that Mahakasapa was the one monk who smiled the time the Buddha silently lifted up a lotus flower at Chittavana. Mahakasapa had thus received the Buddha's transmission of the Dharma treasure. King Ajatasattu sponsored the assembly. Because Venerable Upali was highly regarded for his thorough knowledge of the precepts, he was invited to recite them all for the assembly, as well as recount the specific conditions and situations that gave rise to each of the precepts. Venerable Ananda was to be invited to repeat all of the Buddha's Dharma talks, including the details concerning the time, place, and situation that gave rise to each talk. Naturally, Venerables Upali and Ananda could not be expected to remember every detail, and so the presence of 500 respected bhikkhus was of great help. During the special gathering, all the precepts were compiled and given the name Vinaya Pitaka, the Basket of Discipline. The basket of compiled Dharma talks was named Sutra Pitaka. The sutras were divided into four categories, based on their length and subject matter. Venerable Ananda shared with the assembly that the Buddha had told him that after the Buddha's death, they could discard the lesser precepts. The other bhikkhus asked Ananda whether the Buddha had stated clearly which precepts he meant. But Ananda admitted he had not thought of asking the Buddha that question. After lengthy discussion, the bhikkhus decided to preserve all the precepts for both bhikkhus and bhikkhunis. Remembering the Buddha's words, they agreed not to render the sutras into the classical meter of the Vedic language. Ardha Magadhi was the primary language the sutras and precepts had been given in. The assembly agreed to encourage the translation of the sutras into other languages to enable people to study them in their native tongues. They also decided to increase the number of Banaka, bhikkhus whose role it was to recite the sutras in order to transmit them for both present and future generations. When the assembly adjourned, all the bhikkhus returned to their own places of practice and teaching. Along the banks of the Naranjara River, Venerable Svasti stood to watch the flowing waters. Young buffalo boys on the opposite shore were preparing to lead their buffaloes across the shallow river. Each boy carried a sickle and a basket, just as Svasti had done 45 years earlier. He knew that the boys would fill their baskets with fresh kusa grass while the buffaloes grazed. The Buddha had bathed in this same river. There was the Bodhi tree, more green and healthy than ever. Venerable Svasti slept beneath that beloved tree during the night. The forest was no longer the place of solitude it had once been. The Bodhi tree was now a place where pilgrims visited, and much of the forest had been cleared of brush and thorns. Venerable Svasti felt grateful that he had been one of the 500 bhikkhus invited to attend the assembly. He was now 56 years old. His closest friend on the path, Venerable Rahula, had died 5 years earlier. Rahula had been an embodiment of devoted and diligent effort. Though he was the son of royalty, he lived in utmost simplicity. He was a modest man, and though his accomplishments in spreading the teaching was great, he never spoke about them. Venerable Svasti had been with the Buddha on his last journey from Rajagaha to Kusinara. He was present during the final hours of the Buddha's life. On the road from Pava to Kusinara, Sarasthi remembered how Venerable Ananda asked the Buddha where he was heading. The Buddha simply said, "I'm heading north." Sarasthi felt he understood. Throughout his life, the Buddha had traveled without thinking about his destination. He had taken each step mindfully, enjoying the present moment. Like an elephant prince returning to its native land when it knows its time has come, the Buddha headed north in the last days of his life. He didn't need to reach Kapilavatthu or Lumbini before he passed into Nirvana. To head north was sufficient. Kusinara itself was the Lumbini Gardens. Drawn homeward in a similar way, Venerable Sarasthi had returned to the banks of the Naranjara the night before. This was his own home. He still felt like the 11-year-old who tended another man's buffaloes to feed his younger siblings. Uruvela village was the same as ever. Papaya trees still grew before every house. The rice fields were still there. The gentle river flowed as before. Water buffaloes were still led and bathed by young buffalo boys. Though Sujata no longer lived in the village, and his own siblings had started families of their own and moved away, Uruvela would always be Svasti's home. Svasti thought back to the first time he saw the young monk Siddhartha doing walking meditation in the forest. He thought of the many meals the village children had shared with Siddhartha beneath the cool shade of the pipala tree. These images of the past could live again. When the buffalo boys crossed over to his side, he would introduce himself. Every one of those boys was Svasti. Just as long ago he had been given a chance to enter the path of peace, joy, and liberation, he would show the path to these young boys. Venerable Svasti smiled. A month earlier in Kusinara, he had listened to Venerable Mahakasapa tell about an encounter he had with a young bhikkhu named Subhadda, who traveled with him from Pava. When Subhadda learned that the Buddha had already passed away, he remarked glibly, "The old man is gone. From now on, we are free. No one will scold or reproach us anymore." Venerable Mahakasapa was shocked at the young bhikkhu's foolish comment, but he did not say anything. Venerable Mahakasapa did not scold the young Subhadda, but he did not mince words with Venerable Ananda, even though Ananda was a deeply respected senior disciple. Venerable Ananda's presence at the assembly was considered essential in order to accurately compile all the sutras. Nonetheless, just 3 days prior to the assembly, Venerable Mahakasapa told Venerable Ananda that he was seriously considering barring Ananda from the gathering. The reason he gave was that although Venerable Ananda had a solid grasp of the teaching, he had not yet attained true realization. The other bhikkhus feared Ananda would be insulted by Mahakasapa's comments and perhaps even leave, but Ananda simply retired to his own hut and closed the door. He remained there 3 days and nights, deep in meditation. Before dawn on the day of the assembly, Venerable Ananda attained the Great Awakening. After practicing sitting meditation all night long, he finally decided to rest. As his back touched his sleeping mat, he attained enlightenment. That morning, when Venerable Mahakasapa met Venerable Ananda, he looked into Ananda's eyes and knew at once what had happened. He told Ananda he would see him at the assembly. Svasti looked up and saw the white clouds floating across the blue sky. The sun had risen high, and the green grass along the riverbank sparkled in the morning light. The Buddha had walked on this very path many times as he traveled to Varanasi, Savati, Rajagaha, and countless other places. The Buddha's footprints were everywhere, and with each mindful step, Svasti knew he was walking in the footsteps of the Buddha. The Buddha's path was at his feet. The same clouds the Buddha had seen were in the sky. Each serene step brought to life the old path and white clouds of the Buddha. The path of the Buddha was beneath his very feet. The Buddha had passed away, but Venerable Svasti could see his presence everywhere. Bodhi seeds had been planted throughout the Ganga basin. They had taken root and given rise to healthy trees. No one had heard of the Buddha or the Way of Awakening 45 years before. Now, saffron-robed monks and nuns were a common sight. Many Dharma centers had been established. Kings and their families had taken the refuges, as had scholars and officials. The poorest and most oppressed members of society had found refuge in the Way of Awakening. They had found liberation for their lives and spirits in the Way. 45 years before, Svasti was a poor, untouchable buffalo boy. Today, he was a bhikkhu who had transcended all the barriers of caste and prejudice. Venerable Svasti had been greeted respectfully by kings. Who was the Buddha that he had been able to effect such profound change? Venerable Svasti asked himself that question as he watched the buffalo boys busily cutting kusa grass along the shore. Though many of the Buddha's senior disciples had passed away, there remained bhikkhus of great effort and attainment. Many of these monks were still young. The Buddha was like the seed of a mighty Bodhi tree. The seed had cracked open in order for strong roots to take hold in the earth. Perhaps when people looked at the tree, they no longer saw the seed, but the seed was there. It had not finished. It had become the tree itself. The Buddha taught that nothing passes from existence to non-existence. The Buddha had changed form, but he was still present. Anyone who looked deeply could see the Buddha within the Sangha. They could see him in the presence of young bhikkhus who were diligent, kind, and wise. Venerable Svasti understood that he had a responsibility to nurture the Dharma body of the Buddha. The Dharma body was the teaching and the community. As long as the Dharma and the Sangha remained strong, the Buddha would remain present. Venerable Svasti smiled as he watched the buffalo boys cross to his side of the river. If he didn't continue the Buddha's work by bringing equality, peace, and joy to these children, who would? The Buddha had initiated the work. His disciples would have to continue it. The Bodhi seeds that the Buddha sowed would continue to put forth roots throughout the world. Venerable Svasti felt as if the Buddha had sown 10,000 precious seeds in the earth of his own heart. Svasti would tend those seeds carefully to help them grow into strong, healthy Bodhi trees. People said that the Buddha had died. Yet Svasti saw that the Buddha was more present than ever. He was present in Svasti's own mind and body. He was present everywhere Svasti looked, in the Bodhi tree, the Nirmanjana River, the green grass, the white clouds, and the leaves. The young buffalo boys were themselves the Buddha. Venerable Svasti felt a special relation to them. In a moment, he would strike up a conversation with them. They, too, could continue the Buddha's work. Svasti understood that the way to continue the Buddha's work was to look at all things with awareness, to take peaceful steps, and to smile with compassion, as the Buddha had done. The Buddha was the source. Venerable Svasti and the young buffalo boys were rivers that flowed from that source. Wherever the rivers flowed, the Buddha would be there.